Do you feel like you're missing something in your life? Maybe you're missing a little charm. Check out the Art of Charm podcast. The podcast strives to pass on wisdom about confidence, relationships, and more. And they recently talked about what to do if you feel like you're ready to step away from the partying scene and move on to more ambitious ventures in your life. To listen, go to podcastone.com or download the free mobile app now.
Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's cool fact of the day is that unborn babies are protected by the amniotic sac from harmful microbes like bacteria and things like that. But when they travel out of the birth canal, if they do, they get their first exposure to lactobacillus bacteria and the mom's gut bacteria that's pretty much, well, all over the place. I can say that having caught both my own kids. These bacteria coat the baby's skin, and when the baby swallows, that beneficial bacteria goes right in, which kickstarts your whole microbiome. So I did deliver both kids via vaginal birth. We were lucky that that all worked out. But just to make sure that it worked, I took Lactobacillus infantilis, which is a probiotic that infants need, and you actually pour it right on the nipples before nursing a couple times just to make sure that you get a good start there. So we did that for my kids, and well, now I got to say nipples on Bulletproof Radio. You knew it was coming. Before we get going on today's show, if you are looking for a career in tech, maybe business, data, design, or marketing, or trying to get a promotion or raise, you need 21st century training and skills. General Assembly is the largest and most respected school worldwide for people seeking to grow their talents and master the marketplace. Whether it's learning remotely online or in person at one of their beautiful campuses, you can join the 350,000 people who've already gotten the training needed to propel careers in tech and business. More than 2,500 companies worldwide hire GA's graduates, with 99% of grads who participate in GA's career services landing a new role in the field within 6 months of starting their job search. Take control of your talent and career now. Find out more at ga.co/bullet. That's ga.co/bullet. Enter the promo code BULLET to save on your first class, workshop, or event. That's ga.co/bullet, code word BULLET. Before we get into the show today, if you haven't had a chance to check out Upgraded Whey Protein, check this out. I'm actually not that big of a fan of whey protein in general, because most whey protein out there is highly heat processed. It's a waste product of cheese manufacture with cows are fed genetically modified crap and all that kind of stuff. But when you use whey protein as part of your basically detoxing strategy, it can be really, really powerful if you tolerate whey well. So what I did is I went through a couple years ago, and I've been tweaking the formula ever since, and I found a grass-fed, low-temperature processed whey made straight from raw milk instead of as a cheese byproduct. Like, hey, we're going to throw this into a river. Now we're going to make something we can sell in 10-pound sacks. And, well, this is very carefully made stuff. And I added 20% colostrum, which is mother's milk, which is really full of these IgG signaling molecules that you want, and a little bit of the XCT oil, because having some fat present with your protein helps you absorb it better. So this is a very carefully tweaked whey thing. I don't recommend you have more than 2 tablespoons a day. So if you like to do a smoothie, or if you have some things that call for whey protein in them, you can use this. But don't make that mistake of having, you know, 10 scoops of whey protein every day because you want to get swole. You will not like what that does to you. Like, it's just not a good strategy, and everyone else in the room with you won't like it either, so watch out. If you're going to use whey, use it selectively and use really good stuff. It's called Upgraded Whey on Bulletproof.com. Today's guest is Jason Wachob. He's the founder and CEO of Mind Body Green. And if you're online, you've probably seen some of their stuff, because the Mind Body Green website gets about 15 million visitors a month, which is pretty cool. And their content is all about bringing together leaders in fitness and medicine, health, spirituality, and nutrition. And the mission, and Jason's mission as the founder of Mind Body Green, is to redefine successful living. And the reason that I've invited Jason on the show today is that he just has a new memoir titled Wealth, as in W-E-L-L-T-H, How I Learned to Build a Life, Not a Resume. I think he has a lot to offer you on the show today, because he's a lifestyle hacker who's spending a lot of attention to what makes him perform better. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's an honor.
You and I met in person at your annual conference that you stream live. And I think I gave a talk there, if memory serves, right? Yeah, I did.
Yes.
I did give a talk and just got to hang out with all sorts of cool people that you hang out with. I think I met Emily Fletcher there as well, if memory yeah. serves, and even a couple people that are now members of the Bulletproof team. So I appreciate that you pulled you pull together these nice groups of very influential people who are paying a lot of attention to how the world around them affects their biology and just to health and wellness in general. So what does wealth mean to you, though? Like that's an interesting title. Like you spell wealth wrong. Sure. What is sure. wealth with two L's versus the wealth that Warren Buffett's paying attention to?
So I really believe in this idea that it's time to redefine successful living. And to me, wealth, W-E-L-L-T-H, is the way we should be thinking about it. And I always start with, look, I like money, but there's more to life. And I believe true happiness, true success is this blend of mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, and environmental well-being. And that life is about abundance, not just pure riches. So, although, once again, nothing against money. And, you know, I learned that the hard way. I started out as an equities trader and saw very quickly money did not buy happiness, and went on my own personal health journey and came to this new definition, which is something I'm passionate about.
You and I are kind of cut from the same cloth there.
Yep.
I remember I made $6 million when I was 26. And I was like, this is great. Of course, I lost it when I was 28. No one ever, I always say that. People edit that out. It's like, no, I felt it, and then I didn't have it. And I remember to this day, all I had to do was walk into the CEO's office and say, I quit. And I could have taken my $6 million. But instead, what I did is I said, I'm going to keep working for the company, even though the stock price is tanking and I'm not allowed to trade the stock while I work there. And I watched my $6 million go away. And the reason I did that was that I knew that if only I had $10 million, I'd be happy. Right. Like that was my thinking, right? And that is exactly in alignment with what you're saying there. Like it's about abundance. But most people, especially if you're younger, and a lot of your audience is millennials with Mind, Body, Grid. If you're younger, you're like, okay, there's all this stuff I want to do. I want freedom, right? And it requires money. And what they don't teach you in school anywhere is that $75,000, that's the price of happiness.
Yeah. Right? And we all get caught up in this idea of keeping up with the Joneses, especially here in New York, and I'm sure where you are, where, you know, for some person it's 10, but once you get to 10, well, the next guy's got 50. And look at the house he has, or look at the wife, or look at whatever it may be, and it becomes very dangerous very quickly.
It's one of the reasons I live on Vancouver Island, because here we basically compete to see like whether your old whether your old broken down Volvo wagon smells more like raw milk than someone else's. But you know, I'm just kidding. But it's I do live in a hippie area where keeping up with the Joneses is less of an issue. But I travel a third of the time and I hang out with all kinds of people. And you're right. Like you can get caught up in that. I've got to have the newest Tesla right now kind yep. of thing. And it stresses you out and you're happy for like 5 minutes after you get it. And then it's like, yep. what's next?
And it's a balance. You know, I believe in goal setting. You know, I'm growing a business like you're growing a business. And it's important to set goals. It's important to work your ass off. It's important to achieve yeah. goals. But at the same time, it's this process of being grateful every step along the way. And that's hard.
So let me ask you this then. So what gets you up every morning? Like, why do you do this?
So I'll give you my quick background. So fast forward, you know, I was went to Columbia, I played basketball, became an equities trader. And I became an equities trader because I didn't have money. And back then, this was 1998, if you wanted to make money, you did three things. You either worked on, you became a doctor if you had grades and aptitude for science. You became a lawyer if you had grades for law school. And if you had none of the above, you went to work on Wall Street. And so I didn't have grades or an aptitude for science. So I became an equities trader. And quickly, you know, my best year, my second year, I made $800,000. I was able to pay off all my school debt, was able to buy my mother a car. You know, and here I thought that was a lot of money. And I was miserable. I was miserable because the relationship was falling apart. And, you know, talk about a contrast. Here I am my whole, you know, young adult life looking for this thing. I think it's going to bring me happiness and freedom. And I was miserable. And so, you know, went on this journey, became an entrepreneur, you know, various businesses, a lot of them didn't work, and found myself running a startup about 7 or 8 years ago, flying 150,000 miles domestic. You can't tell, but I'm 6'7". You're a big guy too, Dave.
Oh, you got 3 inches on me. Yeah. That's
like,
pain.
Us in a coach seat, it's not fun. Combined with the startup wasn't doing well. I was stressed out of our mind. Two extruded discs in my lower back, pressing on my sciatic nerve. So a basketball injury combined with flying and stress. Excruciating sciatica in my right leg. I couldn't walk. Went to a doctor. He said, you need surgery. Non-negotiable. I sought a second opinion. And I have nothing against surgery. I just saw it as something I generally didn't want to do. And back surgery, the number, the success rate isn't actually that good. He said the same thing. He said, you need back surgery. And it was almost like an afterthought. He said, you know, maybe some yoga or therapy might help. And so I said, okay, you know, I'll try some really light yoga. Started to do about 5 to 10 minutes in the morning and the evening, and it started to feel better. And started to look at things like stress and sleep and nutrition and the environment, and started to make all these changes in my life. And over about 6 months, I completely healed. So I've never had back surgery, and I'm fine.
Were you still an equities trader when you were doing this?
No, I was gone. I was running another start. So I was running another startup, an organic chocolate chip cookie company that was in every Whole Foods market in the country.
Okay.
So I've been to like 200 Whole Foods.
Nice.
This is back in like 2008. And so I completely healed, and I started to go down this rabbit hole, and I was like, holy cow, everyone has health wrong. Every print magazine leads you to believe it's about vanity and weight loss, and the internet is dominated by people Googling for symptoms and freaking out, running the emergency room. Yep. I said, you know, it's more nuanced. It's Eastern meets Western. It's more holistic. It's this blend of, once again, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, environmental well-being. Like, no one's talking about this. And so that's how Mind Body Green launched, and you know, our mission is to help people live their best life, but we have a point of view on that. We have a point of view that's narrow, and we believe it's this, once again, this blend, but we also are open to whatever works for you. And that is our mission. That's what gets me up every day. It's exciting to, you know, we're changing lives. There is a media company. There's always better content, more content, more things we can offer. And so that's what keeps me going and gets me excited every day to come to work.
It's a different thing than getting up every day to do some trades in the equity field. A lot of people don't. So I used to do a ton of options trading and day trading and things like this while I was working in tech. And it's like you're constantly chasing this. Be like, yes, I made some money, but I added zero value to anything.
Exactly. And, you know, I actually like trading. As an athlete, I love trading. Yeah. I was a competitive guy, but absolutely right. At the end of the day, I was like, I'm not really creating value here. And I also have no skill set. Like, I'm good at this one thing, but that doesn't mean anything anywhere else. I really want to help people and seeing the change in my own life. And, you know, in the journey, meeting people like yourself who have amazing stories and are inspiring on a daily basis, you know, that's what keeps me going every day.
Well, let's zoom in on your book a little bit.
Sure.
And I want to talk about, like you have different chapters in here, and certainly the big structure I'd agree with, but you talk about steps and basic principles in the books. Like, kind of break it down for me.
So I came up with these pillars. So eat, move, live, breathe, love, work, believe, thank, heal, ground. I think I got laugh. I think I got like 11 right there.
That's pretty good memory. I was just testing your working memory and you passed.
Well, because I'm having bulletproof every morning.
Oh, are you now? That's awesome.
Yeah, every morning. So it's this idea of, you know, building a life and looking at your life holistically. You know, to me, you know, being healthy is a culmination of multiple things. You know, it goes beyond diet, although I think diet plays a huge role. But, you know, if you're not happy in your relationship, if you're not happy with friendships, if you're not connecting to nature, I think all these things are interconnected. And so really wanted to dive in to each element of health and wellness, which I think are vital and have experienced out of my own personal life.
Okay. Tell me about what you did with yoga and your back. So I think a lot of people are interested in that. I get people with back injuries all the time coming to Bulletproof or just asking me. And I've had lots of issues. I actually have spina bifida occultus, which means the lower parts of my spine didn't fuse all the way because my mom didn't process folic acid very well. Same thing I don't. What do you know? It's genetic. and there's no symptoms from it other than maybe my low back is a little sore sometimes.
Yep.
So let's just talk about your story. Why yoga? Sure. What form of yoga? What did it do for you?
Sure. So I think the back pain actually probably started in college when I was playing my junior year, when I started to have weird hamstring pain. And when you don't, everything is the lower back, something I didn't realize at the time.
Yeah.
And then the pain started to reoccur, you know, towards my butt. And then it just went further and further south to my toes. And my leg was a lightning rod. So at the time, you know, surgery seemed like it was a serious option that I was willing to consider, but saw it as a last resort. And I saw yoga as this thing where, hey, it might work. I'll give it a shot. If it doesn't work, I'll get surgery. I'll be fine. So right away, like mentally, I'm starting to think like, no matter what happens, I'm not going to be a cripple. I'm going to be okay. Which in retrospect, I think was very powerful in the healing process. This idea of letting go and being positive, and there's science that support that. So I started really light, like 5 to 10 minutes, 4 or 5 exercises, reclining ankle to knee. It was like my go-to standing forward bend. Just do 5 to 10 minutes, morning, evening. Wouldn't go to a public yoga class. You know, I found some stuff online and just kept on doing it and started to feel the pain subside. So one thing I've learned about back pain is the further south it goes, the worse, the further north it goes, and the more localized it becomes or closer to being localized, the better. So right away, I start to feel the back pain start to come up. And I start to feel better. So right again, mentally, this I'm saying to myself, like, wow, like there's progress. You know, once again, really beneficial in the healing process. It sucks when you're doing something and there's no progress, but then to see the progress, you know, positive reinforcement. And it was really that simple, to be honest with you. And I remember I had this moment too in sort of my spiritual awakening. I was going to see a massage therapist, and she was saying how the lower back, the root chakra, was tied to stress and money worries. And I was like, holy cow, like, wow, like I'm blown away. Like the worries, like money, I didn't have any. It's just, it all makes sense. You know when you look at these new age things and all of a sudden they hit home, and then you're like, oh my God, you know, I had one of those moments. And that just led me down this path, and I didn't even go to a public yoga class for like a year. I was afraid to go.
How long after you started doing yoga did it take you to buy those spandex yoga knickers?
Never. Couldn't do it. Never. I wear a t-shirt and shorts. That's it.
I got to say, I don't have any of the spandex stuff, but I did after a couple years buy, I did like pretty advanced yoga for 5 years, and I did buy the male non-spandex tight Lululemon yoga pants. They were really stretchy, and they're actually way better than sweatpants for yoga. I gotta say, like, all right, but they're not like knickers, and you know, they're not the spray on yoga pants or any of that. But there is something to be said for that. Tell me about your first time you went to yoga class. So now you've been like secretly watching YouTube or something, doing yoga at home. What happened when you walked in the first time?
So the first time I went was actually Tara Stiles' class, and my wife went first. And so my wife and yoga, my wife would be my guinea pig. She would go test it out. So she went to Tara and Michael's studio, Strala. And she went to a class, and I sort of caught the end. I'm peeking in the window. Looks like I can do this. And then after class, and you know, I had known Tara and Michael online, just briefly on social media, but I never met in person. And after class, I went in and we started talking, and Michael and Tara convinced me, we're not going to hurt you. Like, like we've got people with backs here, bad backs before, and it seemed gentle. And then I asked Colleen after, my wife, and she said, you know, I think you can do it. And so I really started practicing yoga in public classes at Strala, and That you know, I went started to go every day, and they teach a sort of Strala is very similar to a nice easy vinyasa flow, and I lived there for like a year. It was fantastic.
That's a cool story. I was similarly like, I don't know if I really want to go to yoga class. This was about 10 years ago, and the reason I went is that I'm dating this hot Swedish blonde doctor who's now my wife, and she's in Sweden. She's like, you should take up yoga, and pretty much when you're newly dating someone and they tell you something like okay, and she said something to me that was really helpful, and she said, Dave, my advice is that you find a yoga teacher who's extraordinarily attractive. And I go, really? Why? And she goes, so you'll go to yoga class. Which was very, very wise. So I found a cute yoga teacher in Mountain View. And eventually I was just like, after the first class, like, actually it doesn't matter. So I would do yoga probably four nights a week and once on the weekend. And you know, these are hour long classes, and it really made a difference for me. I always had like fear around my knees because I have had three surgeries on one knee. I had a screw in my knee, and I'm like, I really don't want any more injuries. But just like you, like after doing this for a while, like a lot of pain goes away, even though there's like this risk of like if I sit on my knees for a while, like I might not be able to walk for a day. Like that's been the case for me since high school. And all of a sudden I can sit on my knees meditating and it doesn't matter. Like it's kind of miraculous, right?
Yeah. And I had other issues like that too. So if I've dislocated my shoulders, my knees are stiff, I've got an ankle that's messed up. So all these things too in yoga, you know, my back was the big thing, but all of a sudden I started to gain mobility in my shoulders and I started.
Nice. I got a mobile shoulder.
And the knees and everything. It's all started to, you know, come back. And so, you know, I became a huge believer in yoga and still practice to this day, largely at home though. But
I like to think about practicing yoga at home.
Well, there's a benefit to that.
No, I'm actually working on having a teacher come out to the labs. I'm rural enough that I'm not in a position to spend 15 minutes driving somewhere and 15 minutes driving back at a time that works for them, where it's just too much. So I'm actually holding mini classes here at Bulletproof Labs, where I have a few friends come over and have a teacher come over so I can get back into it,
I love that. And that's the beauty of the practice. You know, my practice today, I do twice a week for 15 to 20 minutes, and that's all I need, and it's fantastic. And I think that's part of the wellness journey. Well, you know, you find what works and you work it into your life, and then you evolve when you need to evolve.
What do you think about using yoga as like a power workout?
I think it's fantastic if you find the right teacher in class, you know, but it's all about the teacher in class. I think some teachers in classes just aren't a fit for that, and others are great.
It's something that is hard to express for people,
yes.
Right? The quality of the teacher matters so much. I remember one time, this was back in Mountain View, California, in Silicon Valley, and I've always had a hard time where you sit with your legs straight and bend forward, probably because of my low back fusion thing. That's been I'm tall, you're tall too. It's been one of the more challenging things to like bend forward. And one day I had a teacher, his name was Tony, was it Gianetti, I think? Anyhow, he was like, just tilt your pelvis. He just said this one word, and I gained 4 inches of forward fold with that one little word he said, right? I'd been doing yoga for 2 years. Right, and I didn't have the control systems wired in. Like I didn't know my body would do that, so I never asked it to do that. And it's that learning process. It actually changes your brain when you do it. I think it's fascinating stuff. I'd like to do more than I do now, but there's lots of fascinating things out there these days.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about aligning work with your values, because this is something that you must hear this every day. I hear it every day.
Sure.
For people saying like I don't want to do this anymore. I don't like this kind of job. I want a job aligned with my values. And they think that means I have to go start a company. But I don't know that. I think most people aren't cut out to be entrepreneurs. Like it.
I agree.
It takes a certain kind of brain and a certain personality type and a certain predilection in order to do it. So what does it mean when you write in your book, you know, that how to like make your work align with your values? Like, what are examples of how people can do that?
So I think it depends on the person. And so what I totally agree. Most people should not become entrepreneurs. I think unless you are uncomfortable with uncertainty, adversity, ambiguity, risk, you know, I just think most people are not built, period. And I would highly, highly discourage it. And it's funny because I think, you know, in 1998, when I went to become a trader, Wall Street was glamorized, and today we're in the age of Silicon Valley on HBO and startups and entrepreneurs, and it's sexy and unicorns and all that stuff. And it's just, it's not the way things work.
There are a lot of wantrepreneurs out there where like, oh, I want to do it because it's cool, but at their core, most really successful entrepreneurs become entrepreneurs because they can't not become entrepreneurs.
Correct.
Like they'll get fired from everything else. I'm certainly like that. I was an intrapreneur when I was in Silicon Valley because even then I couldn't do the big corporate thing until I was pretty old. And I finally like tempered myself where I can make myself do it even though I didn't like it.
Right. I agree. And I think we're probably similar that way. So aligning work and passion, you know, I think it starts with one, doing a deep dive. You know, what are you passionate about in life? What are you good at? And sometimes that's more of an external thing. Like, I'm passionate about health and wellness. And so that's great. But, you know, I think you need to go deeper. What are you passionate about? Connecting to people? Are you passionate about, you know, crunching numbers? Are you passionate about being creative? I think you have to drill down to what you really like doing and try to build a career around that. Sometimes you can find that in a job, and I think sometimes you can't, and that's okay. I think if you're really passionate about travel or trying great restaurants, then there may not be a job out there that fits into the job description, but you can certainly create that life by finding a job that gives you the time and the resources to go to great restaurants and travel. So I think it's a bit of a mix, and you have to really do some introspection. And what do you really enjoy doing? And what are you good at?
Did you ever think about becoming a yoga teacher?
Never.
The reason I'm asking that is that a lot of people, when they first discover yoga, they're like, wow. And that's one of those problems. I actually did.
I looked
at becoming yoga certified. So I'm like, I spend 5 nights a week or 5 days a week doing this anyway. Like, I might as well get paid for it, right? And like, I feel like I have something to offer people. And I was looking at Anusara, which is a form of yoga that's
actually a lot of.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know John?
No, not well.
Not personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like an offshoot of Iyengar style yoga, but it's a couple thousand hours of teacher training. Like it's a hardcore training. And I wanted the physical challenge and the benefit of doing it. But come on, I'm an entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. Like I'm a vice president of cloud security, things like this. There's no way that I'm going to make a living where I can afford like food as a yoga teacher living in a big city.
Do I see bulletproof yoga in the product pipeline down the road, Dave?
I don't think so. I mean, there's so many good yoga teachers. Like, I don't have to do that one, right? But I really did think about this years ago. And same thing like massage therapy, right? Like, it's not a good fit for me. I like getting massages, and I like working. I like working as a healer. I know all sorts of weird healing modalities. A lot of biohacking stuff touches that. But this is, I think, the problem people struggle with, and kind of telling some personal stories here, and so are you, because you write about aligning work with your values, but if your values are, like, I really love yoga, or like you said, I really like to go out and eat at restaurants, you're probably not going to be a restaurant reviewer, because we have Yelp and it's free. Like, sorry. It's just how it is.
Yep.
Despite the fact that Yelp might extort those restaurants by deleting the positive reviews unless you pay them. Yelp, we're watching you. We know you do this. So what would you say to someone, though? Like, let's just paint a stereotypical person who's early in their career, 25 to 28, somewhere like that, and they're like, look, I have a job, and my boss tells me what to do every day, and I don't really like it. And I want to do what I love, right? So right now it's like, well, I should go out and, you know, start a company and live in Thailand and work, you know, a couple hours a week.
Right.
What would you say to someone who has that plan versus all these other things?
God, I'd say a couple of things. One is, I do think a good place to start is to ask the question, what would I do if I didn't need to make any money? What would I do for free? And so, you know, when I started My Buddy Green, I didn't make any money for 3 years. So I truly, and I was married at the time. My wife was very understanding. So ask that question. And then I think you need to ask some pragmatic questions too. You know, can I make a living doing this? And what does that look like? And if you're young and single and, you know, you've got a little more freedom. If you're not, you don't. But I think it's important to be pragmatic about it. I think it's important to ask people. You know, LinkedIn, one of the greatest tools ever. Find people who are doing what you're doing and see if you can connect with them. Or maybe you have a friend and ask real questions. Do they like what they're doing? Are they earning money? You know, ask those types of questions. And then three, I think there's something to be said for gaining real world experience. So if someday you want to be a biohacker, you want to be an entrepreneur, like, they should probably work for you, Dave, first before you decide to go to Thailand and start a company. Like, there's knowledge, there's experience. You know, that's the best way to learn. Like, don't just jump out of the gate. I think it's so rare you can be successful doing that.
I think Mark Zuckerberg almost did the world a disservice because he's like, look, I started this company. And by the way, the first Facebook servers were at my company's data centers at Exodus Communications. I'm like, bam, we were there back when they were the Facebook, right? But here's the thing. He was phenomenally successful and is really good at what he does. But like, that's an example of a unicorn, right? And I see all these people who have no apprenticeship, no mentorship at all, and they're like, "I'm just going to start a company," and it's like walking into a fan that's running and
burning okay. at the same time.
Nice, exactly. How did you learn to become an entrepreneur, though? Like, equities traders generally aren't good entrepreneurs. Like who taught you?
Well, so there was a lot of, you know, being an equities trader, there was a lot of entrepreneurial spirit there. You know, I had my own P&L. There was a lot of freedom, and I ended up leaving and trading my own money. So, you know, there was a lot of freedom there. And part of it was, you know, there were moments in time where I thought about going back to the quote unquote establishment. I just couldn't get a job. And in some ways was an accidental entrepreneur and started to gain experience. You know, first it was in healthcare and then consumer products, and that got me into wellness. And then when I got to media, it sort of started at scratch. And that's why, you know, I don't think it took 3 or 4 years before I thought My Buddy Green had a chance of being successful. And I think part of that reason is I didn't have experience in media. It probably would have happened a lot faster. I thought, I'm smart, I'll work my ass off, I'm passionate, I'll figure it out. And sure enough, I did. And I'm sure, you know, luck played a role in it. But, you know, I believe in experience. I believe in real world experience. A lot of the stuff they can't teach you in school, whether you go to Harvard Business School or what have you, you know, having mentors, having real world experience is invaluable. You know, and that's something I've gained, and it's still something I'm working on. You know, I have a great mentor now I'm working with, and I know I don't have all the secrets. And that's important. And I think the moment you stop seeking to be better as an entrepreneur, as a person in life and in business, is sort of when the music stops and it's over.
Yeah, it's very well said. I'm thinking back. One of my very first companies, it turns out, was the first company to ever do e-commerce. I sold a caffeine t-shirt out of my dorm room over something called Usenet before the World Wide Web was invented. And it turns out, like, that's kind of a groundbreaking thing. I sold these shirts to like a dozen countries, and it was born out of desperation because they raised tuition. It turns out it was by 900%. I went back and I did the math. I used to think it was 1,500%. And I'm like, I can't afford this. Like, my summer job doesn't pay for my college anymore. So I'm going to start this thing. And it worked. But if I had accepted the abundant offers of help from successful entrepreneurs, I would have probably gone to Silicon Valley and started some Vistaprint or some sort of amazing company. But I didn't do that because I was actually too stubborn and angry to take on mentorship. And for people listening to this, it's like, just go out and do it on your own. It's probably not a good strategy. Go out and find someone who just absolutely kicks ass at doing what you love and offer to sweep the floor. You'll learn more doing that than you will doing it yourself and walking into the buzzsaw a few times.
Yep, and it's hard. You know, I've looked for mentors for years, and to be honest, like, a lot of them aren't that impressive when you meet them, and I think that's a lot of the challenge, you know, where you grow as a company, you grow as a person. You know, I'm happy to say I finally have someone who's fantastic and who's really been incredibly successful and passionate, and so, but it took a while to get there. You know, and I think that's the problem too. We live in an age, look, everyone's passionate about wellness and self-improvement, and there are, you know, countless numbers of 25-year-old life coaches. and I love that people are trying to be positive and help other people, and that's fantastic. I think that's great, but on some level, is there really knowledge and experience there? Probably not. So,
yeah.
we live in interesting times.
Very well said. There's an awful lot of life coaches out there, and I run the Bulletproof Coach training program there, and one of the things that I look for is people who are usually people who've suffered a little bit.
Yep.
Because having to learn to overcome something, whether it's financially or from a personal performance perspective, like, you know, my brain doesn't work, whatever it is, it sometimes gives you enough arrows in your back to be a successful coach. And then there's the coaching skills themselves. And I'm a little frustrated when you see people like, I'm just going to hang out a shingle and call myself a life coach. And when I first got really serious about this entrepreneur stuff, like, this is, well, actually, I've always been kind of serious about it, but I just started looking at personal development stuff going back more than 10 years. I hired 3 or 4 coaches, and these guys are $300 an hour. Right? And kind of like you're saying, I realized after I was, you know, a couple thousand dollars cheaper or poorer, I'm like, you know, like, they didn't have anything that I didn't have, right? What I really should have found was someone who had 20 or 30 years more experience than me and was willing to share it. And most of those people you can't buy, right? Yeah, or if you can, it's a $10,000 engagement for a month and they come in and spend 2 days with you. But man, there's a lot of value there if you get to the point in your career where you can bring in someone who's, you know, started a company that grew to $100 million in 3 years and done it twice. I'm working with a guy like that right now. Like, okay, that's cool.
It's fantastic when you get one. It's really game changing.
Yeah. Well, we got off track a little bit, but that was part of what's actually in your book. So your book is very broad reaching. So you talked about, that was your work chapter. We're going there. And I look to give value to people who are listening to the show. I figure that that's an area where they could be really helpful. Let's switch gears. You talk about meditation, and you talk about the chapter called Feel, about how the concept of energy is real and how it affects your work and life environment. So are you some kind of like a New York hippie? I mean, energy is real? I'm kidding. What is energy is real? Like, what does that mean to you? Describe this energy.
So I think we've all had those moments when you've been in a room and it feels tense. You know, you can cut it with a knife. You know, the story I tell in the book, I was talking with my, as far from New Age as possibly can go in this story, I was talking with my old basketball coach at Columbia, Armand Hill, who is now with the LA Clippers, and I was talking about violence in the NFL and just getting his take on it as a guy who's a professional sports world. And he said, you know, look, these guys practice violence. You know, think about it. You know, how can you turn that off? And he said, you know, I've been in rooms with NFL players, and you can feel it, man. You can, and you know what? He's right. I think we've all had experiences like that. And I think we've had experiences where you've been in rooms with, you know, people like yourself and inspiring people in the wellness community who are doing amazing things, and you just can't help but feel the energy, and you're uplifted, and it's great. And we've all have those friends who, you know, there's that friend you have who, whenever you see him or her, they're just always positive and upbeat, and you're like, you know, I wish I could see this person more often, and you just can't feel, you know, nothing but joy. And then I think we all have friends too where they're just the Debbie Downer, and hopefully we don't have a lot of those friends, and hopefully we're slowly eliminating them. But every you know, you get together and it's one complaint after the other, and the conversation just goes south, and you just walk away feeling like, why did I do this again?
Yeah, I just took a beating over dinner, right?
And like, I thought we were going to talk about me. Like, what happened? And sure, friendship has ups and downs, and there's give and take. But that's what I mean by energy. You know, it is palpable, specifically with relationships. And I'm a big believer in you know, who you hang out with, you know, really sets you up for success. And vice versa, if you're hanging around the wrong people. You know, I think there's truth to this notion that you're a combination of the 5 people you hang out with most.
As you become more successful, it gets harder and harder to hang out with really successful people because they're all too damn busy.
Yes.
Like I look back at my Wharton class. I haven't seen most of my Wharton friends. Like, I email them occasionally, but we see each other maybe, like, some subset of them, maybe once a year, if even that. How do you go about, like, hanging out with people more successful than you, because you're already pretty successful with MindBody.
Sure. You know, it's quality, it's trust, and the inner circle becomes smaller. You know, I think, you know, in your 20s, the inner circle is pretty big. You know, it's like, we all recall going to that, like, first wedding in our 20s, and it's like, everyone's invited and everyone's there, And, you know, as you, I'm 41 now, I think your circle starts to shrink. You've got family obligations, you've got work obligations. I think it becomes more about quality versus quantity.
It does. That's a good observation. And when I said more successful than you, I hope it's really clear there. I mean, more successful at something, not necessarily, like, you know, I only hang out with people who have more money than me is like the biggest asshole thing you could ever do.
Yeah. To me, it's about hanging out with people who are inspiring and doing incredible things in their life and success in that, you know, whether it's, you know, the beauty of Mind Body Green, our office, you know, communities at the center of what we do. So every day someone's coming in there. It could be some person, you know, who's a yoga instructor that not a lot of people know, but has got an amazing personal story, and that person comes in and you're talking to them and you get amped, or a celebrity who's incredibly passionate about acting and being the best they can be, or a doctor or an entrepreneur. I think those people, you know, even if the interaction is not frequent, the quality that you get out of that conversation and that interaction is just fantastic to meet with people who are, you know, living their passion, living their best life, inspiring people. It can't help but rub off on you. And that's it. I mean, the quality is just so important.
It's something that I spend a lot of my focus on as an entrepreneur, especially because I live in a more rural area. It's like, if I'm going to go somewhere, I'm very conscious about, okay, how do I get to hook up? Like right before we started recording, I was like, oh, that's right, you're in New York. So I literally sent a note to my assistant saying, okay, next time I'm in New York, Jason and I are going to hang out. Like, we'll do a recording at Mind Body Green. We'll have dinner, whatever. But I actually now have a list in all the cities where I travel that's like, okay, here's the people I want to go spend time with.
Yep.
Right. And that is something that no one teaches you to do that in school. Your parents probably didn't teach you to do that. But if you become conscious around this, you end up building community and end up having these people there that have the kind of energy that rubs off on you, and that hopefully you can benefit as well in those relationships.
It's absolutely critical, and the friends will change and the community will change, but it's absolutely critical. There's not enough time in the day, period, to do what you do and what I do. And so you just have to be super conscious of your own time, because at the end of the day, you will not be successful if you're not taking care of yourself. And so if you're taking care of everyone else and trying to meet everyone else's demands, you're the one who's going to suffer, and then everyone suffers. You're not going to be able to fulfill the mission. They're not going to be happy, and then it's just terrible for everyone. But
it's amazing, and this is one of those things you're not going to learn as a first-time entrepreneur in your mid-20s.
Yeah, right?
And you're at a different stage in life, and there's the Ericksonian stages of adult development and all that stuff. And I should tell you, I wish someone had explained to me, like, what's going to happen with your relationships over time, and here's how you cultivate them and all that. And it's funny. I'm sure that if I asked my dad, who's, you know, is mid-70s now, the same thing. No one told him what was going to happen between 25 and 35 either, right? And or 35 and 45 or whatever. And honestly, I haven't really asked that many people what happens between, you know, 43, where I am now, and 53. But now that I think about it, I'll ask a couple of people because they probably lived it.
They have. And there are certain things that, you know, I remember someone told me one time, like, nothing good happens after, and inserts like time at night, like nothing good happens after 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. And these things, you know, I'm sure, you know, I had to find those lessons out the hard way before I started to realize that.
Wait, are you one of those morning people?
Not really. I wake up around 6:30.
So you wake up in the middle of the night. I knew it. No. I just did a post yesterday. It looks like 40% of people are not morning people. And the 60% of people who are morning people try to do like sleep-in shaming, right? And so now I've just like rebelled against that. And I became a 5 a.m. riser for 2 years just to like prove to myself that I could do this. And then I realized one day that, you know what, that's not natural for my body. It just isn't. Like, I have a long circadian window and I'm way happier and I sleep better if I sleep in a little bit. So I wake up ideally I'd wake up around 8:30 or 9, but I have kids. So I wake up at like closer to 7:30. But I stay up late and I get my best writing done after 11. So I'm working on my next book right now. It means I'm going to stay up late. So you wake up early. Do you wake up at the same time? I'm just asking this because you do health and wellness. And you do all this stuff. So I think people listening want to know, like, all right, what do you do in the morning? So you wake up. You wake around 6:30. Do you, like, you know, do you meditate? Do you, like, ring crystal bowls and You know, do you pound a Mickey's? I have no idea. Give me your morning.
So my wife and I actually don't set our alarm, and our office is three blocks away. So sometimes 6:30, we'll go to 7:30, but usually on the early side. First thing I will do on most days is meditate. So I will brush my teeth, go back to bed, sit up straight, and I, you know, practice Vedic meditation or TM mantra over and over 20 minutes.
No kids then, right?
No kids yet. Okay. We will soon, hopefully.
By the way, get ready to give up your meditation practice in the morning once you
have kids. I've heard that.
It's called the knee in the groin while you're sleeping meditation. I've got that one down.
So we'll meditate. My wife will join me sometimes. Sometimes she won't. If for some reason we're running a little late, we don't meditate. Next thing we do is breakfast. And so, like I was saying to you earlier, I've been doing Bulletproof Coffee for the past 3 weeks.
Cool.
Which has been fantastic. And what's funny for me there has been, I've always been such like a big breakfast guy. So like, you know, breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, dinner like a pauper. And so this was a bit of a new thing for me, and I've been feeling great, and I do huge Bulletproof.
Has it changed your meditation? I'm curious. Like, do you feel a difference?
Well, I always meditate before.
Oh, before you do. Okay, cool. Yeah,
always before I put any caffeine or food.
Cool.
So then we do that, and then, you know, we always get the print edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'll look at the website. I'll look at work email immediately, see if there's anything pressing, and then we just sort of we walk to work, which is really nice to do as a couple. Our office is three blocks away, and so we just roll into it and get going.
Do you exercise in the morning? Do you exercise every day? What's your deal there?
There's one key thing I forgot to mention. The first thing I do before I even start meditation is I repeat the words thank you silently over and over in my head. You know, big believer in a gratitude practice. And so before I even begin the meditation, the moment I open my eyes and I'm awake and I see my wife and we're here, and I just thank you. And before I do anything, I do that. And I've done that since I was like a little kid. My mother ingrained that in me. And so health and – so, I change all the time. And so currently I meditate every day. I don't always do twice a day, but I never miss a day. So I'm always going to do once a day. If I miss the morning, I'll do the afternoon or vice versa. You know, there was a period of my life where I did yoga every day. And what happened there was MindBodyGreen started to grow. I started to work more and more. My every day became 3 days a week, and then it became three days a month. And all of a sudden I said, you know, what happened to my yoga practice? All this wellness is making me sick. I'm making everyone better, but what about me?
And yes.
So I came to the conclusion. I said, look, like, work isn't going to change. What's more realistic than me hopping on the subway for an hour and a half yoga class and carving out 3 hours door to door is, well, I'm just going to start a home practice. So now every weekend on Saturday and Sunday, I do a home practice, 15, 20 minutes. Cool. I never miss it. So I do that. I meditate daily. There was a period where I got back into weights. We have a gym in our building, so started to lift weights twice a week, doing one set for each body part to failure, you know, quick, like 20-minute workout. Lately, I've been doing push-ups and sit-ups and dips, you know, getting back to body weight, you know, do that to failure, do it a couple times a week. And that seems to be working for now, and I'm not bored with it, and I'll see what's next. So currently that's, you know, I do my push-ups, my sit-ups, my dips, I do yoga, and I meditate, and I walk a lot. And that seems to work for me until it doesn't, and we'll see what's next.
Constant change is part of it.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the interview here, but you have one more chapter in the book that we haven't talked about too much, but you've touched on it three or four times. And you have a chapter called Love.
Yep.
And you talk about having supportive, healthy relationships, and you actually go into soulmates. Tell me about the three types of soulmates.
So I believe we have multiple soulmates, three types. And so I believe there are two romantic types and one non-romantic type. And so the first kind, I believe, is the one that we're supposed to be with, but the one that isn't supposed to work out. It's the one that probably pushes your buttons. It's the one where you have that super passionate, fiery relationship. it's the one that helps you grow as a person, but at the same time, it's the one that is a moment in time that you're probably not supposed to be with forever. I think they're painful. That's why it's, my own life, I've experienced this. And I think we've all probably had that one way or another. Then I believe there's the forever kind. I believe that there's that one that, one on one makes three. I think with the first kind, one on one maybe made one and a half, maybe two on a good day. I think the first kind probably brings out your insecurities. I think the second kind eliminates your insecurities. I think the second kind is the one that helps you develop as the person you're supposed to be. And together, collectively, you are stronger. I believe that to be my wife, and we have a fabulous relationship. And not to say that kind is easy, and it's, relationships are hard. They require work. The friends who are always there when we need them, they're the people in passing that have serious impacts on our life, whether they're with the right comment at the right time or, being there at that moment when we need to hear the right thing at the right time, or it's that instance so many times that's happened to me. You hear one thing from the people close to you over and over and over, but they're so close to you, you don't listen. Then you hear it from an outsider all of a sudden, then boom, it hits you like a rocket ship, and you finally sinks in. And so I think those types of soulmates are abundant. I think they're everywhere, and I think that's the beauty of life. And I think, the overarching theme with soulmates is I think we need to reframe them. I think, once again, it's operating from a place of abundance and not scarcity. And that's how I choose to look at soulmates. I think there are lots of various opinions on this one, but that's how I've seen them in my own life. And once again, I don't believe you necessarily need. I think a soulmate can help you become a better person and can help complete you in some way. But in no way am I saying that I think you need someone else to complete you. Once again, you'll never be happy if you're not happy with yourself.
I've had lots of people ask, hey, how do I find a soulmate?
Yep.
You got any advice for people on that?
I always start with, work on yourself.
Great answer, man.
You're never going to be happy if you're never going to be happy in a relationship if you're not happy with yourself. So, become the person you want to be, because I do believe in like attracts like. Other, rules of thumb, I think, go to places that you like. If you love living a healthy lifestyle, and you live in LA, go hang out at Bulletproof. Go hang out at Whole Foods Market. Go hang out at places where you're going to find like-minded people.
Yeah.
Probably not going to find your soulmate at a bar at 2 a.m. Sure, it happens, but it's rare. But I say, work on yourself. And be open to that, and be open to the possibility of chance encounters at various healthy establishments around the world.
So that leads to the obvious next question. Sure. Do you play Pokemon Go?
I do not. I hate video games.
There's so many people in the last few weeks have been like, it's my new dating strategy. I play Pokemon.
No, I don't even know how the kids do it with all these dating apps and tools and everything. I don't know. God bless them, but I don't know how they do it.
It sounds a lot more complex than it was back before the interwebs.
Yes.
Back for you and me. Well, it's been a fascinating interview, and there's that question that I've asked everyone who's been on the show, and I'd love to get your answer on this because I think it's going to be interesting. If someone came to you tomorrow and said, look, I want to kick more ass at everything I do, what are the three most important pieces of advice you'd have for me? The three things I need to know based on your whole life experience.
Sure. One, find a mind-body practice that works for you. I think we'd all agree that stress is a killer. Stress is toxic. Find some sort of practice that works for you to help deal with stress. Stress doesn't go away. Stress changes. Your problems change. An entrepreneur told me that once. You think you get to one level and then you get there and then it's the next thing. Your problems don't go away in life. They just change. So one, find a mind-body practice. Two, gratitude. You know, I am just such a huge believer in a gratitude process. Once again, I believe in goals, like let's kick ass, let's take names, let's accomplish all these great things. But you're going to lose a lot if you're not being appreciative for what you have in that journey. It is a journey. It's not a cliche. It's real. You know, enjoy every step of the way. Don't wait to lose something for you to appreciate it. So two, gratitude practice. You know, and three, I would say, you know, focus on quality versus quantity with relationships, with your interactions. I think we can all do a better job there. I think in the age of social media, we've got thousands of friends and followers and these people everywhere, but the quality of those relationships aren't really there. So, you know, I would say focus on quality relationships in business, in life, with your family. You know, I would say focus on quality. I think, you know, you're never going to be successful. You're never going to accomplish the goals you want to accomplish if the people around you are not supportive and the type of people you need around you. So I would say those three things: mind, body, practice, gratitude, and quality relationships.
Awesome. You did not disappoint with your answers.
Thanks, you.
Jason. I think people probably have already figured out they go to mindbodygreen.com. Anywhere else they should go to maybe find your book, or where else would you like them to go?
The book, Wealth, WELLTH. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You go to wealth.mindbodygreen.com, and I'm on all the social media channels at Jason Wachob, WACHOB as in boy. So check us out.
All right, Jason. Thanks for being on Bulletproof Radio.
It's an honor. Thanks so much, Dave.
If you enjoyed today's show, you know what to do. Head on over to your favorite bookseller and pick up a copy of Jason's book. Check out some of the cool content on Mind Body Green. And while you're at it, pick up some brain octane, get some ketones going in your brain, get some of the three new roasts in total we have for Bulletproof. We've got The Mentalist, which is my new favorite, which is slightly darker than our original roast. And we've got French Kick, which is dark, but not burned to a crisp. So it turns out dark coffee can taste good. Give it a shot. Have an awesome day. Get tons more original info to make it easier to kick more ass at life when you sign up with a free newsletter at bulletproofexec.com and stay bulletproof.